Friday, July 9th. Or no, July 10th, I'm sorry. And we're on Genesis Study 61. We're still looking at the Toldot, Jacob, and we're going through this portion of Scripture of Joseph and his brothers, which began at chapter 42. So let's go to chapter 42 of Genesis. And moving on from where we left off last week at chapter 42, could someone read verses 22 through 25?
Reuben answered him, saying, "Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. He turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he told Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And thus it was done for them.
Okay, thank you, Luke. So remember, this is Joseph going into Egypt because of the fact, I'm sorry, not Joseph, the brothers. The 10 brothers, Benjamin stayed behind in Israel with his dad Jacob, so the 10 brothers go into Egypt, meet with Joseph, because they need food, there's a famine going on. And if you take a look at verse 21, which we didn't read, it says, "Then they said to one another, truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen, therefore this distress has come upon us." And this is a concern they had with regard to Joseph's accusation when they showed up for the grain. They wanted to, you know, "Hey, look, we'd like some grain. We'd like to buy it from you." He had money to buy it. Joseph accused them of being spies. They started to get freaked out, like, you know, what's going to happen to us now? And they admit their guilt in verse 21, that this is what we happening to us. God's doing this because of what we've done to Joseph. Then, in verse 22, Reuben tells these guys, "I told you not to sin against the boy, and you wouldn't listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." So, all these guys had probably been living under the sense that at some point, some time, they were going to have to face the consequences of what they'd done. And Reuben seems to believe that this is that time. And
they think he's dead.
They think Joseph is likely dead, yeah, I would say. Or maybe he's alive in Egypt, they think. But they, who do they don't think is Joseph?
They talk about his blood, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Maybe they do think he's dead.
And it's interesting the amount of time that it's lapsed since that happened to this point, that now they're saying that, you know, all of a sudden that you shouldn't have killed the boy.
Yeah. Probably 20 years have gone by.
Right.
20 plus years. Yeah. So verse 23, what did they not realize as they were having this discussion?
That Joseph understood everything.
Joseph could speak Hebrew. He grew up speaking their language. And although they were having a dialogue, we learn in verse 23 that there was a dialogue going on between Pharaoh's government and these guys from Israel through an interpreter. So presumably, Joseph was speaking Egyptian to these guys with regard to these accusations, and they were being interpreted. But nonetheless, Joseph could understand exactly what they were saying without the benefit of an interpreter. And so what do you think Joseph realized after listening in on this discussion?
God, he had to feel remorse. He had to feel bad. His brothers now finally admitted.
Well, so he sees his brothers, you know, there's discussion that there's some guilt. What about Reuben? What do you think he senses with Reuben?
I tried but failed.
Yeah, or an admission, you know, maybe it's a confession that, you know, there's some kind of maybe were more assigned Reuben's part, and Joseph probably.
Well, he's also certain that they don't know the heck who he is.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So when he hears this conversation and he's able to understand what they're saying, what's his reaction?
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that when he says he wept, I mean, he really probably had a pretty significant emotional breakdown. And he turned away from him, really, to have this time to go through this reaction that he had, emotional reaction. But he did return to them, spoke to them, and what does he do when he comes back to them? Yeah, now why Simeon? Yeah, I mean, I don't think really there's a good authoritative answer on this. I think some people believe that it's likely Simeon because Simeon was the second oldest.
Right.
And it may be that when Joseph heard Reuben kind of take responsibility, Joseph may have decided to, as the second oldest, as the person next responsible, take Simeon. And take him as this hostage. So
Simeon's probably wondering why too.
Yeah, yeah. Like why me?
Well, why he wouldn't have picked Reuben because of the fact that Reuben really didn't want him to be sent into slavery and everything, or put in the pit and all that kind of stuff. So the next person that was probably in charge and everything else was probably Simeon because he was number two.
And that's what the thinking is as to why Joseph probably picked him.
Right. He was the cheerleader of the whole thing when put it together.
So Simeon gets identified and binds him. So that's a bad thing. But Joseph also does a good thing in verse 25. What's he do that's very generous?
But I always thought that he...
Yeah, he gives him the grain for free.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't have to pay for that. He loads up their wagon train with all kinds of food, and they don't even have to pay for it.
Now, do you think that was for generosity, or do you think he had an ulterior motive for that?
Actually, my bad. I'm totally. It's secretive. They don't realize the money's back in the bag.
Right? I always thought.
You're right. So it's not like, hey, take it for free. He loads him up with the grain. He takes the money, but these guys don't realize that the money is back in their bag. So, my bad. I messed up there.
A little foreshadowing.
Yes, exactly. We'll see what happens next year.
He is keeping Simeon.
And he's keeping Simeon. That's right. So, could someone read for us verses 26 through 28?
So they loaded their donkeys with grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened up his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of the sack. So he said to his brothers, "My money has been restored, and there it is in my sack." Then their hearts failed with them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, What is this that God has done to us?
Okay, so there you go. So there, this is again, lets us know that Joseph had secretly put the money back in their bags because they load their donkeys with the grain, they leave, and verse 27 it says, as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place. So this tells us that not only had they left, they'd spent a good day traveling. You know, they're way out of where they'd met with Egypt, just getting ready to unload, spend the night. And the guy finds, one of the brothers finds money in his sack. And in verse 28, he tells his other brothers, look, my money's been returned, and behold, it's even in my sack. And verse 28, what's the reaction when all of these guys find out about this?
They got scared.
So why do you think they're afraid?
That they're accused of what they're accused of.
Yeah, I think that they realize, man, holy crap, we're going to, for some reason, we've got this money, and Pharaoh's government's probably going to think we took the grain and took the money, too. So there might be even some discussion as how the heck did the money get here.
I think it's because they were upset because of the fact that the money was in with the food that they had to eat.
That's a stretch.
Yeah, sanitation.
That's right. Right. It's, I'd be upset about that. You know?
Yeah, me too. And there's no hand sanitizer really back then either.
That's right. It's like leaving the paint on a cup of disease, you know?
Strange that here they are traveling back and Simeon's left behind, tied up, and how they're going to explain this to their father when they get back as to what happened. It doesn't explain why Simeon was detained and why he was tied up, and they're just going on as if, well, you know, we just lost the brother.
So, well, that's a good question. We'll see, as we read through here, Walter, you'll see that they come back, because I think they probably are stressed out, like, what am I going to tell Dad? But you'll see how they come back and they say to their dad, look, you know, we'll get to that part. Here's why we don't have our, we're one less than we went down with. And then they're going to tell him, if we want more food, we got to take Benjamin. And Dad's going to flip out. We'll see this here. Now, in verse 28, who do they blame or who do they attribute this dilemma to?
God.
Yeah. They believe that, you know, this is, well, you'd say, if you're a New Ager, you'd say it's karma. If you're a believer, you'd say, as Paul says, don't be deceived. God is not mocked. As you sow, so shall you reap. And these guys understand that spiritual law and realize that it's coming down on us for what we've done. They're seeing this as discipline, punishment for what they did with Joseph 20 years later. Let's take a look at the next passage here. And here you go, Walter. Here's exactly the question he asked. Could someone read verses 29 through 35?
When they came to their father, Jacob, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly with us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest. Men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no longer alive, and the youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. The man, the Lord of the land, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me and take grain for the famine of your households and go. But bring your youngest brother to me that I may know that you are not spies but honest men. I will give you your brother to you and you may trade in the land. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jay. So here we have these guys returning to Jacob, and they basically say, here's what happened to us. Now, everything we read here, we've read before as it actually happened. This is just a recounting of the exact same thing, that they're taking what we read earlier as it actually went down. And now these guys are saying to their dad, truthfully, they're relating all the events as they actually happened. We don't have Simeon with us, basically, because of the fact that when we told him we're honest men, he said back to us, well, prove that you're honest men, and I got a test for you. If you're honest men and you're not spies, then bring your, if you go get your youngest brother, bring him back, then y'all, you know, you all can, I'll know then that you are honest men as you claim to be. That's, and so they're telling their dad, this is why we don't have Simeon with us. Now we're going to see dad freak out. Could someone read verses 36 through 38?
The father Jacob said to them, you have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon is no more, and now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me. And Reuben said to his father, you may put both of my sons to death, but I do not bring him back to you. Trust him to my care, and I will bring him back. But Jacob said, my son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he is the only one left. Harm comes to him on this journey you are taking. He will bring my gray head down to the grave.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, David. So, yeah, Jacob accuses these nine guys of something in verse 36. What does he accuse them of?
Bereave me of my children.
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
Well, I guess I think we have somewhat of an answer. Remember, what was their explanation to Dad about what happened to Joseph.
Yeah, a wild animal, blood.
Yeah, so, but Joseph says what to them now? I mean, I'm sorry, Jacob says what to them now?
You deprived
me of my children, including Joseph. So this seems to be a point at which we can say that he, you know, looks like he's been blaming. Maybe not, we haven't known about it, or maybe they haven't known about it, but he's definitely been thinking that they have had possibly some responsibility. They definitely know. They're blaming him for Simeon. He's blaming them for Joseph. Mm-hmm. When they told him it was a wild beast, he doesn't seem to be buying that now. And now he's saying, after you got taken two, now you want to take my favorite now, Benjamin.
Yeah. Good luck.
And so he's a little bit ticked and freaked out. Verse 37 says that, here's Reuben again, firstborn. And what does Reuben do at this point when he hears his dad's accusation?
He'd kill his sons if he doesn't do it.
Yeah, put my two sons to death if I don't bring them back to you.
Thanks, Dad.
Put him in my care and I will return him to you. So, do you think that Reuben is serious about wanting to get Simeon back?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I think so, too, because I think that's a pretty strong vow to make.
Yeah.
Because bringing Simeon back might not even be in Reuben's control, and he's putting his two sons up as their lives is, you know, is a proof or a vow that he'll do this. He's taking it seriously.
Whoever would Jacob want to kill his grandsons?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know was it a bona fide?
Yeah. I'm going to kill my grandsons if you don't bring them.
Well, how does Jacob respond to that offer?
No, you're not leaving.
Yeah, no. It's no, yeah, exactly. There's no way Benjamin's leaving. Because if Benjamin is gone, if Benjamin, something happens to Benjamin, what's the concern that Jacob?
Two of his three sons.
That's true. And then what else does Jacob say?
Two of his favorite sons from his wife that he loved more than anybody.
Good. And then what does Jacob say that will result in?
Death.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to kill him. You know, think of Sanford and Son. Oh, this is a big one, Elizabeth. You know, I don't know whether that was going on or not, but he definitely, Jacob is letting these guys know that if he's suffered the loss of Simeon and Joseph, Benjamin is now the remaining son of his favorite wife, and this will take him down.
But you know, Chris, as the boys were all growing, boys know that Jacob adored Joseph as well as Benjamin. These guys got to look at him and feel like they're outcasts. Like, you know, you don't love me the way you love him. And you know how, in a family, how that affects children.
Well, it had such an impact on these guys that they did what? That's exactly right. We know that's exactly what this had such an the father's attention to these guys. So Jacob may have been partly, we look at Joseph because he was prideful in telling his dreams,
right.
But Jacob may have also had a role in, yeah. You know, he didn't do it, but the brothers definitely, I think, sensed this dynamic for a long time, and that's why Joseph was.
Yeah.
Was it Reuben being the oldest?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you've got 10, wasn't he the one that was kind of sort of in charge?
I think so.
His group?
Yeah.
So when it came down and he issued his warnings when they were thinking of selling him, why didn't he assert himself and make the decision on behalf of the 10 as opposed to, you know, have a democratic discussion and not exert his power to say, listen, we're not doing this?
Great question. Have you ever been with a group of guys? Or you might even think of your high school days.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But even today, a group of guys that you have you think is a democratic discussion, and everyone has an idea that you think is crazy, and even though you think you have the voice of reason, no one will still take your.
But wasn't Reuben not around during when they sold? Reuben had left.
He had left and he'd come back, but well, you're right. They wanted to kill him, but he still agreed to do what with the kid?
Get rid of him.
We'll put him in the pit.
Right.
Remember, so. I would just say, Walter, that I think it's a common dynamic for people just to go along with groupthink or, you know, mob rule. There's not, you feel, I'm not trying to make an excuse for Reuben, but sure I've been in that situation before, where I've been part of a group that's done something that you thought, this isn't, I'm not sure I agree with this.
Well, this was going to happen. This was God's plan. So,
by the way, I've never murdered anyone. I'm not saying that. Okay, but you know, similar types of dynamic in terms of discussion, decision making. Sorry.
As you say, this is going to happen. This is God's plan. I mean, it was. I don't care what the customs were.
But it's interesting. I mean, because we all know that God's plan is being carried out today.
Absolutely.
Yet we're all making decisions as if we, based on rational. What we think are rational responses, and we're making choices. So it's weird. I believe there's a degree of this is going to happen, but it's not too fatalistic because these guys had free will to make personal decisions. God is definitely working his will out through the exercise of these guys.
Well, he wants us to set goals and go after things based on what we know, but you know, we need to also be open to his input, and eventually sometimes it's going to go down his way.
Because there's a lot of deception in the Bible. I mean, a lot of deception. A lot of conniving women that are in the Bible and everything else. And it's worked out to be God's plan and everything else.
Well, just to give you a little bit of a sense of where we're going, in order maybe jump ahead a little bit, I want to give away... I don't want to. This is a spoiler alert. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Spoiler alert. What you just said can be summarized in one verse. Go to the last chapter. And if someone could read Joseph's statement at verse 20.
As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people.
So no matter what we do and no matter what evil we commit, he is not going to let it thwart what he wants to do. Now the question becomes, and I don't want to get into too much into philosophy, which is a Bible study, but the question becomes, are we fatalistically determined to make every choice we make, even bad choices, to accomplish God's will? Or does God have a goal in mind, something that he wants to accomplish, and there's two paths to get there? A path of obedience, and the path of obedience isn't involves trial. It doesn't involve not having trial. Path of obedience always, but the path of disobedience, which also involves trial and probably a lot more pain. Yep. I'm inclined to believe that as an agent of free will, I believe what the Bible tells me. Believes that he says you decide this day who you're going to serve.
Yep.
So I believe if he's given me a choice, I believe that I can make decisions that are evil or good, obedient or disobedient. I don't believe that God has programmed me to make disobedient decisions, and I've just got to carry out these disobedient decisions to fulfill his will.
Right.
But whatever decision I make, it's not going to thwart what he wants to do.
Exactly.
So we agree that this all worked out well in retrospect because Joseph was tested, he rise to power, Israel is spared. But this could have gone down differently, possibly. I mean, it didn't have to be these guys had to be disobedient, lying murderers. And I don't think we have to be disobedient, lying murderers. Right. If we go down that path, God's still going to do what he's going to do. We're not going to thwart it.
Take it one step further. God loved Jacob. Jacob had 12 boys. Jacob made his own decisions by his free will on the boys that he loved and the boys that he didn't love so much. So God knew that was going to happen. So I agree with you 100%.
Something I wrote down a long time ago. Faith gives you the courage to make decisions and the confidence to believe the results to come.
And we all have to make decisions. I mean, that's on
Absolutely.
You. God's not going to sit back and let you just lay on a couch and try to let him make, you know, you got to. And you want to be guided by God's decisions, but ultimately you've got to make the decision.
Yeah. Frequently, though, when you're making decisions, I mean, if you make 100, they're not, do I kill somebody or don't I? I mean, that's a pretty simple thing
that's
that we can all agree.
Very true.
Maybe that is a bad decision.
On the other hand, Walter, I would say this. Of the 100 decisions, I bet you 20% of them have to do with lying or not lying.
Absolutely.
I would bet.
Yeah.
And in my mind, lying may be worse than murder.
Mm.
That's a radical statement, but Satan is the father of lies. I mean, you think of everything that went down, the murder of Cain, it was because of a lie that was told in the garden. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, we make decisions, they don't seem important, but they really are important. Because I know a lot of people that believe in the idea of a white lie. That's the most evil thing I could ever think of. But people are just, it's culturally accepted. You know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, there's a lot of things that we do that we think don't have any moral dimension, but, and this is my opinion, I'm just, who knows, but this is what my thought would be. Because if you're right, 100, especially when you're running a business, you've got 1,000 decisions.
And that's what it's really
tough. Most of them probably are amoral, but in business, I know there's a lot of lying going on. In the practice of law, I know there's a lot of lying going on.
Well, yeah.
And you, as a moral agent, and you're part of that practice, you got a decision to make. I could lie my ass off and get a quick reward, or I could do the right thing, maybe go through some pain, but know that I'm not going to have to come back 20 years later and think, God's coming back on me now.
You can't be a lawyer if you're going to tell the truth.
Well, there you go. I'll let it stay there.
No, let's start that one.
It was really interesting this morning on Fox. They had two pastors on there about this illegal immigration issue. One of them was talking about whether they should go ahead of the church, whether the church should be going ahead and turning illegal aliens in. And the other pastor over here was saying, well, yes, we need to turn them in if they don't have their green cards and different things like that. And, you know, this guy over here was saying, well, you know, it's not our job. The Bible says it's not our job to go ahead and look for green cards. Our job is to go ahead and help people out in need and blah, blah, blah. And this guy over here is saying, yes, that's the case, that's true, but it's a matter of where we're a society of law and everything. And so, you know, it was a great debate. You'd look at it, sincere guys. Yeah.
Both believers, I would guess.
Both Christ believers and everything else. And then here they are, one saying that, no, we just go ahead and feed them and house them and, you know, don't worry about their legal status and everything else. And then the other guy over here is saying that, yes, we can house them and feed them and everything else, but we also need to, if there's any legal issues that we need to go ahead and turn them in. So, that's, you know, that's a huge moral issue right there. Okay, do you go ahead if you're a church body and you know they're illegal or they went ahead and committed their sex offenders or something like that? Do you go ahead and turn them in? This guy's saying no, you don't. This other guy over here on the other side is saying yes, you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting how the devil goes ahead and it's just right in the middle of something like that.
And, yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, in our Monday study, we're talking about issues where sincere believers disagree on things that,
right.
You know, you could get into, well, he's of the devil or he's of the devil, depending on how you come out of the issue. And maybe the devil is in there somewhere, but it's hard to, this is why it's important to be led by the Holy Spirit, filled mm-hmm. with the Holy Spirit, and the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. You know, you got to have honesty, speak the truth of love, but
yeah.
It's you go a lot of directions on this, definitely. In any event, these guys tell their dad, look, you know, or Reuben fesses up and says, I'll go down, you can have my sons, and Jacob says, absolutely not. So, now we go into chapter 43. And in chapter 43, could someone read verses 1 through 7?
Now
the famine was severe in the land, so it came about when they had finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, go back, buy us a little food. Judah spoke to him, however, saying, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy your food. But if you do not send him, we will not go down, for the man said to us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. Then Israel said, why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother? But they said, the man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that you would say, bring your brother down?
Chase, thank you. So, We have at the last, in the last chapter, Jacob saying, no way you're taking my boy down. Absolutely not. There's a fact now mentioned in verse 1 of chapter 43. What's the very first thing mentioned?
Famine.
Yeah, so that's, but just because Jacob doesn't want to go down doesn't mean the famine's going away.
Right.
And that's right. And it says, so it came about when they had finished eating the grain which they brought from Egypt, that it seems to have a change of heart, because he says what?
Go back and buy
it. Right. And these
we're
guys
hungry.
These guys are probably like, didn't we have this conversation before? And that's exactly what their thought is, because who pipes up?
Judah.
Yeah, and what does he say?
He said he ain't going back unless he brings the little brother.
That's right. He says that the man, talking about Joseph, who he doesn't know is Joseph, solemnly warned us, don't see my face unless your brother, don't even come back unless your brother's with you. And verse 4, Judah goes on to say, look, if you send Benjamin with us, we'll go down, we'll take care of this right now, this problem you're complaining about. But if you don't send him, what does Judah say? If you don't let him come with us, what does Judah say?
We'll go.
We're not going. We'll all starve. You're starkly, now talk about decisions. These guys have said, you're the dad, you're the leader of the tribe, you decide, do we live or do we die? You make the choice. And in verse, now, this is also really good. This is also, I mean, this is just show, this is real life too. This is how when people are forced with responsibility, a lot of times they react. They don't want it. And how does, instead of making a decision, what does Jacob do in verse 6?
You know,
why are you making me make this decision?
Yeah,
why,
it's your fault. What, wait a second. I don't want to make the decision. Why, you guys are treating me so badly. In other words, he's trying to blame them for the circumstance.
Because he's saying, why didn't you tell me you had another brother?
Right.
And that gets back to, I think you've done my first son. Now I think you're going to do it.
He's ticked because they told Joseph that he had another brother. So he's like, you guys have screwed me.
Yep.
And so their defense is, we never intended to, we're just trying to do what you told us to do. So there's a lot of animosity. And no food. That makes people really cranky. Let me tell you, some people can't even go without breakfast.
Questions. How long do you think it was from the first time they went down to get the grain, to come back to Israel, eat all that grain, and now they got to go back? Do you have any idea how
much? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I give your guess this will be as good as mine.
And why in verse 6 does the author go from Jacob to Israel?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we don't know the answer. We do know that once God has given Jacob the name of Israel, this is a few chapters ago, he still will go back and forth using the names interchangeably.
Okay.
You know, it took him later on, because it says we could have made this trip twice.
That's right, yeah.
So they kind of have a time frame if you...
Yeah, that's a good point.
How long
it
takes them to
that's walk. A very good point.
Chris, what do you think... You've got 10 brothers. These brothers have got to be
Joseph is 30. Joseph is probably 37 or 38 at this point in time, and he's the second youngest. So you got to figure Reuben's pushing 50.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just think about this. Why, if you're the father, would you send 10 brothers to do the job that probably one brother, maybe their best negotiator, could do? The brothers aren't humping the grain and stuff in the bags. They've got all kinds of servants and people with them. I mean, why would you send 10 people to do the job that probably one guy could have done, your best son? Obviously, if you send 10 people to do something, you're going to have 10 different ways, 10 different motives, 10 different conversations, 10 different people to speak. What he's saying, somebody spoke out of turn here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
He said 10 because they had no confidence in any of them. The whole point.
But he knew what happened when he
wanted to get
10
rid of them.
They came back without his son.
Your guess would be good as mine. I would probably, if I had to really think through a possible solution to this, I would say that it's possible that you're right. They have a whole, all these servants and people that could have done it. But at the same time, what does it take to get servants to do their jobs? You got to have management, right? And you got to have middle management. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the world today. The world operates by top management, middle management. And I'm just, again, I have no idea, but I'm just speculating. They want the goal is to get as much food back home as possible. Therefore, you want to get as many servants to go. And so you may need, you know, maybe the 10 guys are responsible for commanding their servants or managing their households to get the work done. Just a guess.
Yeah. They herded sheep together and all that kind of stuff when they initially buried Joseph or got rid of him and everything. Well, so.
And remember, the goal is, if we go down there and buy food, we want to buy as much as possible. I mean, we want to load ourselves up to the brim. And that, so the manpower, the management talent may have a lot to do with it.
And with that kind of money that they were going ahead and transporting over to Egypt, they certainly wanted to protect it and everything, so... Because there had to be a lot of money that they were transporting.
Oh, yeah.
If this is all the dialogue that is recorded, because it says, why'd you tell him about it? Really? He questioned us. He didn't really ask you how many. If you come back to verse 13, it's not that specific. At least not yet, but I don't know. That's the whole dialogue.
Oh, you're up. You jumped up to 13?
Yeah.
Okay, let's...
Well, back to 42, verse 13.
Oh, 42, 13.
Your servants, they volunteered. Your servants are 12 brothers, son of one man. He didn't ask him how many were there. No, my lord, the answer. Your servants have come to buy food. 12 brothers. We're all the sons of one
man. So you're saying that, help me out, what is your point?
Because they're kind of in Israel or Jacob here saying, is why did you bring this trouble by telling him you had another brother?
Okay.
And in verse 7, he's like, well, because he questioned so closely.
Right, right.
He didn't ask your number. He was just like...
Oh, so you're saying that in verse 13 they messed up by saying they had 12.
Yeah, they're not totally being honest here with Israel still.
So where are they not being honest? You're saying they're not being honest in 43:7?
7.
Man questions particularly about us and our relatives saying, is your father alive? Have you another brother? So we answered his questions.
That's what they're telling
their father now. Oh, yeah, I mean, maybe right.
Come back to verse 42... That's not specifically what he asked.
Okay, so it could be a lie if they're saying he specifically asked us how many children. Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. My sense is that they're trying not to lie here at this point, but maybe they did. Let's take a look at the next passage. Could we look at verses? Could someone read verses 8-14?
Judah said to his father Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice to him. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags and carry down to the man as a present. A little balm and a little honey, aromatic gum, aroma gum and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double the money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also, and arise, return to the man. And may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man, so that he will release to you your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved.
Okay, great. Thanks, Liz. So here you've got, again, Dad saying you got to go back, and then Judah taking the lead on this.
Yeah.
Simeon's gone, Reuben's already offered the sons, but Judah then takes the lead and says, I'm not going down unless you give Benjamin with us. And Dad says, you're to blame for this whole mess. And then they tell him, look, you know, here's what he said. And they may have been lying to him, but they explain, here's how he knew what was going on. Judah then pipes up again in order to motivate his dad. What does Judah say to motivate his dad to let him take Benjamin?
You can hold him as responsible.
Yeah. Basically says, look, send the lad with me. We will arise. In other words, not us. He said, you don't have to give it. That's a good part. That's also a good, I don't want to go too far on sides here. You know, if you're managing people, managing businesses, managing activities, you want to give responsibility and accountability, not to groups, but to individuals. Because if you tell a group, you got to do this, everyone's going to do this.
Exactly.
And so Judah says, look, I send it with me. I'll be accountable. We'll rise up that we may live and not die as well as you and our kids. Verse 9. I, Judah, will be surety for him. And you can hold me responsible. So, again, Judah's really trying to get Jacob to move off the dime here, because they all know that the right decision is to let him take Benjamin. And they're trying to persuade him. And he says, look, if I don't bring him back to you and set your son Benjamin before you, then let me bear the blame for you forever. Now, Judah then goes on to say in verse 10, we could have bent down and back twice if you'd let us do this. So,
how far a journey is this for them?
It's probably the Cairo area, and they're probably by the Dead Sea. So, yeah, it's a few days. So here you go. And also, too, so Jacob then says in verse 11, he kind of acquiesces. He folds. He said, okay, if we got to do it, then do it. But as long as you're doing it, what does Jacob tell him to do?
Let's sweeten the
package. Yeah, like, let's make this guy feel good.
Yeah.
So they say, look, take some honey, balm, myrrh, gum, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Now, some commentators say, well, there must not have been a famine if there's nuts and almonds. Keep in mind that, you know, the basic staples of mankind to live are complex starches and grains and carbohydrates, not little proteins. You know, you could probably, if you're an aesthetic, if you're like John the Baptist, you can probably live on insects and honey for a long time, but you're not going to feed masses of people on locusts and honey. And, some of the biggest famines in the world history have been the result of loss of complex carbohydrates. The potato famine in Ireland. There no bread, no potatoes, people died. When Stalin wanted to murder 30 million people in the Ukraine, he just took all of the grain, all of the bread from the farms, and these people were eating bark in their kids. Okay. And you got 30 million dead people. So, Mao Zedong, the same thing. So even though there are some proteins, a few almonds and pistachio nuts, it's not enough to keep people living and sustained. You need bread. You need grain. And so you've got here, take this to him as a gift. And then also verse 12, and I haven't been able to figure this out. I've gone back and forth on this. I've been reading commentary and just reading the text. Take double the money in your hand, and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. I'm not sure whether they're taking three times the dough, twice the dough plus the original money, or whether the double the money is just really coming back to the plus the original money times two. Bottom line is that they take a lot more. I'm inclined to say it's three times the money, because the original money would have been the money that they should have paid the first time, and the double the money would have said, look, we're really grateful you did it. That is a solid last time. We want to really let you know how grateful we are.
Question.
Shoot, please.
As we're reading through some of this, we see Simeon step up, or Reuben, excuse me, Reuben step up first. Later on, then we see Simeon. And then now we're Judah. What happened to Levi? The top four guys.
Yeah. So it's a good question. And I don't know the answer.
Or is that why they became the priesthood?
I am not sure. I mean, I don't know the answer. I don't know. I'm not sure if the Bible tells us. It may. I can't remember. I just don't know the answer to that, Paul. I would say this, though. I'd say that I think where we're going with Reuben chiming up, Simeon offering to be hostage or being taken hostage, and then Judah chiming up are the fact that there is real repentance going on. Judah was the main instigator, and Simeon didn't say anything 20 years ago, and now you're seeing kind of them put themselves in harm's way in order to make things right. And so this may be the scripture is telling us that these guys are really turn around. Yeah. And I can't remember how much Levi was involved in the when they sold him into slavery. I don't know how much he was mentioned. Judah definitely was an instigator, and Reuben tried to help out. Simeon was the oldest, so he should have been in there besides Reuben. So Jacob then says, look, take your brother, take Benjamin, go, and return to the man. So I want you all back here, verse 14, and may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of men, so he will release your brother Benjamin. And as for me, he just, now Jacob just becomes fatalistic. If I lose y'all, I lose y'all. It's just, you know, I'm going to lose y'all if we stay here. No one has food. Yeah, exactly. Let's do one more passage, then we'll finish. Could someone read verses 15 through 18?
So the men took this present, and they took double the money in their hand. And Benjamin, then they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. 16. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to die with me and him. So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. And they said, it is because of the money that was not returned in their sacks in the first time that we are being brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys.
Okay, great. Thanks again, Chase. So verse 15, they take all what they have, they rise, they go down to Egypt, and they stand before Joseph. Now, verse 16, what does Joseph see?
Benjamin, brother.
Benjamin, yeah. And we're going to see Joseph have another major breakdown.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, it's just like, wow. You know, Joseph probably thought he'd never see any of his family again. And he tells his house steward, bring the guys in the house and slay an animal and make ready the men to die at noon. So Joseph's attitude is, I want to honor these guys. It seems to be that.
Yeah.
Not that he's going to play a little more cat and mouse, but nonetheless, he wants to make it a special occasion. And so verse 18, the attendant does as Joseph said. Now, so I think the idea is let's have a special occasion here. Verse 18, how do these guys perceive it?
They figure that he thinks that we stole the money, so they're bringing us to his house either to make us slaves or kill us.
That's right. These guys are scared. Oh, crap! We're going into the house. And verse 18 says, and I don't know what Chase's version and my version both say, seek occasion against us to fall upon us. Does anyone have anything different than fall upon us?
Overpower us.
Okay. I'm guessing that the better translation would be, you know, to kill us.
Yeah.
You know, if you're fallen upon by bandits, usually, you don't usually survive. So I think maybe they are fearful for their lives. But nonetheless, they're not real happy about this idea of the party in Joseph's house at lunch. And so we'll continue on next week from there.
Chase,
yeah, sure.